Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We'll be talking with former Nats GM Jim Bowden coming up at 12:15 on Grant and Danny. Carl Hagelin, Caps winger, at 12:45 this hour. A couple more thoughts on whether or not Trent Williams will get traded as well. But right now, let's get to our Beltway Blitz. Craig Hoffman is our Redskins beat reporter. Craig, Kyle Shanahan kicks off Revenge Week on Sunday at FedEx Field before a meeting with Kirk Cousins. Were you in on the call with him yesterday with the local reporters?
I was not on the call, but I've certainly seen the highlights and read through the transcript.
Your thoughts? I mean, he says there's no hard feelings. I get that. He's been in three buildings. But then some of the quotes he's had this week kind of makes you second guess that. His actions will say 1,000 words this weekend, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, he's going to say the right things, so to speak, but he's also saying exactly what you think. He can't help it. He's been very open and honest about this in the past. He does not like this place. He does not like Bruce Allen and Dan Snyder and anything associated with the Redskins. He's got some good relationships with some people here, certainly some of the position coaches, maybe. Obviously, a lot of them have moved on to other places, including to other head coaches. He's done a couple stories with guys like Mike Jones and John Keim, who covered the team. Mike, obviously, has moved on to a national gig. John's still covering the team locally. So there like are people in Washington that he's fond of, but it is not anybody that is associated with the Redskins organization, and I fully anticipate him, if he has the chance to run up the score this weekend, to do so. And if he wouldn't get fined his entire paycheck, he'd probably flip double birds at the owner's box too.
What's the latest with Trent Williams? I assume no movement, no updates, nothing.
I mean, there's updates. Cleveland called. It's John Dorsey said as much. He held a press conference, which imagine that. John Dorsey said straight up, he takes two to tango, and he's called. And I know he is reluctant to offer his first rounder, especially because they traded last year's first rounder for Odell Beckham. But I think that he would be willing to do it for Trent Williams. But Bruce does not want to trade Trent Williams. It is really simple. Every team that is called has gotten the same response. We're not interested. So unless John Dorsey like calls and says, we'll give you 8 first round picks before Bruce can hang up the phone, I don't know that this deal gets done. But then again, Bruce has no positive result of saying, yeah, I'm interested, let's keep talking. If he thinks Dorsey is going to do essentially what he did with the Giants, which is just beat the door down until it's a ridiculous deal that gets it done, then maybe eventually he goes, yeah, okay. But I don't think that's the case. I think, honestly, Bruce does not want to make a deal at all.
Speaking of doors, walk through one of these. Door number one, the Redskins don't want to trade Trent Williams because he's a great left tackle and they plan on using him for a couple more years as a great left tackle. Door number two, the Redskins don't want to trade Trent Williams because of some kind of personal thing where they don't want to look like they lost a stare down for some reason, or they want to continue to fine him, some kind of conspiracy theory deal like that.
I would say door number one, but like they know he's not coming back.
Right.
So if it's door number one, it's just living in a land that doesn't exist. So it's got to be door number two. Like, they've made a conscious decision that if they don't get it's like a kid with a new toy. It's like, if I can't have that, their parents took away. Like, if I can't have this, then nobody else can have it. Like, they won't share it with their sibling, whatever. Like, that analogy sucked, but you get the point.
Like, I like the analogy.
I see where you were going. I just know what you're stepping
in. Danny, you got kids. Figure it out for me. You can fix it after I'm done. But the point is, like, if Trent's not going to play for them, they're determined to not let him play football anywhere else, even if it is to cut off their nose to spite their face. And I don't understand it at all. But that seems to be the position they hold right now. Of course, Bruce could, at the deadline, flip and just be playing hard to get right now, trying to drive up the price. But I think you have to be showing, you have to show some kind of willingness to deal before teams are going to come to the table to try to make a deal.
Yeah, the way I would try to quantify it, Craig, is what would a loser do, and then figure it out with the Redskins. Thank you. Appreciate it, buddy.
See you. Bye.
See you, man. There he goes. Talk about winners, please, Tommy. The Washington Nationals won the National League, not the NL East, but the actual National League, the biggest thing that you can get on the way to the World Series. Heisty, rust is a thing. The teams that have swept through the first to the NLCS are 1-7, I believe, since 1985. How do they counteract it?
Well, there's not much you can do other than, you probably hold a couple of workouts, maybe tomorrow and Saturday, to get yourself ready for what the beginning of next week brings. But I'm sure you'll see some pitchers, to live hitters and vice versa, and maybe some simulated games here, at the stadium this weekend. But you'll not replicate what you're going to face with the, with the pressure and all of that that comes with a World Series atmosphere. So, you do the best you can to try to stay loose, stay with the routine, and get your work in and get ready for game one on Tuesday.
Heisty, who do you give the most credit for to the turnaround?
I would just say, this is going to sound like a cop-out, but I just say the entire team because, let's face it, you look at Dave Martinez and what he was going through. Everybody wanted to call for his head at 19-31, but when Trey Turner got healthy again, Grant, that's when this offense really started to kind of take off. And, they played 650 baseball, 651 baseball the rest of the way. They had the best record in baseball from the time they were 12 under 500. So I just think it's a combination of a lot of things. I think the starting pitching probably is the one constant with this team. Yeah, they got to score runs. Yeah, they got to play great, good fundamental baseball, but I think the starting pitching, to me, is the one thing that was constant with this team throughout the whole season.
Most important player for them to win a World Series is?
Anthony Rendon. I think it's imperative that he continue to do what he's done and have that same type of MVP presence that he's displayed the entire season. It's helped him drive in 130 runs. It's helped him hit the home runs and hit, well over 300. To me, he's the one constant in that lineup that means everything, and I think that he has to have a big series.
Heisty, thank you, pal. We appreciate you.
Okay.
See you,
rest the pipes. Get rid of that cold. You got a big series coming up. There's Craig,
yes,
Heist
sir,
on Grant and Danny's Beltway Blitz. You're listening to The Fan. Next, the first ever GM. Helped get the Nats off the ground here in Washington, D.C. when they were at RFK Stadium back in 2005. Right now covering the ALCS. So we'll also talk about who's a better matchup, the Astros or the Yankees. Jim Bowden is next right here on The Fan. With Danny, I'm Grant. You're locked in to The Fan, your flagship home for the World Series-bound Nationals. We'll now be sitting around for five more days waiting for Game 1 of the World Series. They're trying to figure out if they're going to play the Astros or the Yankees Game 4 in that ALCS tonight. Jim Bowden's covering the series for MLB Network Radio and CBS Television, but also Jim Bowden's the first ever GM of the Nats, and he helped get this organization off the ground in trailers at RFK Stadium. JB, I want to start with that, if you don't mind. Oh, how far baseball's come in D.C., you take us back to what you remember about those first days with the Nationals and building a fan base from scratch.
Yeah, Grant, Danny, it was such a surreal situation because when I came on board as the first ever GM there, there was no name of the team yet, right? It was just Washington.
Yeah.
And then we had the press conference to call them the Nationals. Which was pretty cool. And you're right, there were trailers. And, the first year we're at RFK Stadium where there's sewer smells within the dugout. I mean, the circumstances were just, it was gross to say it nicely. But the vibe there on that opening day at RFK, there was nothing like it. And RFK, for people that don't know, the way they built the stands, it rocks, it moves, right? That's how it was built back then. So to watch that vibration with a sold-out RFK on that opening day when baseball was finally back in the capital city, it was incredible. It really was. It was a tremendous experience. And then going through the process of finding the owner, I was part of that process. And I was a big proponent of Mark Lerner and his family, but Mark in particular, because Mark was such a fan of the sport. and he wanted to win. And in every conversation of all the owners, prospective owners, and there was a whole, you know, what, 5, 6, 7 groups, and I met with all of them. But Mark Lerner separated himself because with me, he got it, right? He said, we're going to build it through development and scouting, and when the time is right, we're going to spend the money to bring a world championship to D.C. And he was obsessed with that more than the bottom line. Like, he understood what it took to win. He also is a very loyal human being, right? The Lerner family, very loyal to their people. And so, I was instrumental in pushing with Commissioner Selig and Bob Dupay and the group, along with a friend of mine, Squire Galbraith, who was actually part owner of the Nationals and may become the first part owner to win 2 world championships because his family won with the Pittsburgh Pirates with 2 different organizations. So pretty cool for him.
Wow.
If they can win 4 more games. But, just the experience of Gary Lerner's. And then, of course, you know, when we drafted Ryan Zimmerman, it was just so – he was such the perfect guy because he's from right there, right? He's from University of Virginia. He was a Gold Glove third baseman. We knew he was going to hit. He was low risk. We got him to the big leagues the year we drafted him. I'll never forget. I think it was September 5th that year. He got his first big league hit, a double. But he represented what we thought the Nationals would be about. We thought he could be on the cover of the yearbook and the media guide and the programs. Like, he had that family makeup and character that we wanted the Nationals to represent. And I feel like that worked, you know? Like, it just – Zim is still there when they get to the World Series all these years later, which is really cool. And finally, the last thing that I did for the Nationals to me, which I'm really most proud of, is I did not know Mike Rizzo before I hired him. But I went through an interview process based on just his track record at Arizona as a scouting director, his ability to evaluate hitters and pitchers, his philosophies. And intellectually, he just blew me away. And I brought him in. And now to look at him as one of the best GMs in the sport, pretty proud to be a part of that organization moving to D.C. and where they are today.
Jim, I wanted to ask you specifically about Ryan Zimmerman, because for me, it's, you know, listen, I'm a fan and I enjoy wins for myself because I'm selfish and self-important and the whole nine yards. But I also really like this group. I like this team. And I could not be happier for a guy like Ryan Zimmerman, who was there for this building phase and had to endure the 100 lost seasons and what's happened to his career with the injuries and everything else. Give us the insight that you got about him as a young person when you guys made him the first draft pick in Nationals history to where he is right now, kind of the grandfather in that locker room.
Hasn't changed at all. Zero. From the first day I met him and brought him in and introduced him to Frank Robinson, and his palms were nervous of meeting a Hall of Famer. Ryan's never changed. I mean, you know, we did a lot of work on his makeup and character, you know, really did background on his family. He's just a class, high character individual. He's quiet. He's humble. He never led with the voice. He led by example, but he was professional. He was polite, great family man. And, you know, I think, one of my greatest memories when we moved to Nationals Park is the first game was against the Braves. He hit the walk-off homer to left center field. And the reason I bring up that walk-off is that's what he was. And he went through a period of time where he had more game-winning RBIs than anybody in the game. Walk-off Zim is what we used to call him in the front office. He wants to be up with the game on the line in the biggest moments. And then that patented line drive to right center field that he has. So you've got the character, the leadership in the community. He's everything you want. Signing the autographs, giving to charity. I mean, that's what he lived up to, everything we thought. Now, do we know all these injuries would happen? No. I mean, when we drafted him, we thought Gold Glove, Silver Slugger, third baseman for years to come. And, obviously injuries to his shoulder, he moved to first. But to be able to still have his career and still contribute, it's pretty special, no doubt about it.
Jim Bowden on Grant and Danny here on The Fan, the first ever GM of the Nationals, and helped get them going here in Washington, D.C. The 7-day layoff is petrifying for me. You know, just going back through and looking at the history, every other team knew it would be an obstacle, and they all tried the same things the Nationals are going to try with simulated games and bringing up minor leaguers from instructs and all the little things you can do. And there haven't really been teams that have cracked this code here. Why is it so difficult, and should we be concerned about the one-week layoff?
Yeah, I mean, history is actually, as you know, you've studied, it's mixed results, right? We've seen teams that have laid off for 6 days, gone on to win the World Series, and we've seen teams that have been laid off 6 or 7 days that don't. I would say for the pitchers, it's not a big deal. you know, you're well rested, your arms are strong, let's go. So, you know, if this series goes seven, and let's say for example, Gerrit Cole has to pitch a game seven, I'd rather be Washington with 6 days off than the Astros with 1 day off, right? As an example. So I think the only thing that I worry about a little bit is the hitting and how hot Washington is. I mean, they finished the year winning eight in a row, then they win the wild card game, and then this last series they sweep. Like the role they're on, that momentum and the timing and everything that's going on, you hope the 6 days doesn't break it up from a hitting perspective. That's the only part of the game I worry. I worry more about hitters than I do any other part of the game. You know, I always was concerned when our teams would come back from the All-Star break and there'd be a four-day break, and then the hitters came back and some had kept the timing and some didn't. It's not something you really can control. It's kind of an unknown. And then the other hard part is when you get to October baseball and you sit 6 days, guess who you get to face right out of the get-go? You're going to get either a Cole or a Verlander or a Severino in that first game. So, you know, it's always challenging. But I would much rather be in Washington's position than Houston or New York's, knowing that I'm in and I can rest and I can prepare and relax and have, you know, have a good 5 or 6 days getting ready. I would rather be in that position than have to worry about what might be a seven-game series between the two teams I'm covering right now.
Yeah, well, let's get into those two teams, Jim. Houston's great. I mean, they're as good as you can be built, I think, in this modern era. Yankees and their slouches themselves, how do you see the rest of this series playing out? And then, you know, how would the Nationals match up against either team?
That's a great question. So I'm stubborn, right? So back in March, and Grant knows this because it's printed all over the internet on all our preseason predictions. So at the beginning of the year, I predicted that the Astros would beat the Nationals in seven games, right? So I'm not going to change off of that. At the end of May, when the Nationals were 19-31, I called Dave Martinez the worst manager in baseball because I had predicted the Nationals would be in the World Series. Now, fortunately, Dave Martinez became Casey Stengel, and the Nationals are going to get here. But I'm not going to go against what I've been saying. I do think Houston is the best team in the sport. I thought that in March before they traded for Greinke and before Yordan Alvarez became the Rookie of the Year. I just think that the pitching is dominant. Now, that being said, here's kind of how I feel. I feel like the Nationals at this point can match up with the Astros. I think they can take them to seven games. I think the Nationals would beat the Yankees if they were matched up right now. And the reason for that is I believe that Steven Strasburg has become a true number one ace dominant pitcher that I want pitching game seven. So when you got Scherzer and what this Strasburg is, Corbin and his slider, I just feel like they're capable of running the table. Hudson's pitching great. Doolittle looks like he's back to form. And the blend of these kids and the veterans on the Nationals, that's a special combination. You know, when Soto comes up and grabs his whatever and stares at the pitcher and then delivers, I mean, the kid is just so ridiculously talented. And you watch Victor Robles run the ball down in center field. You know, Turner can change a 2-2 game by stealing a base. Rendon may win the MVP. If not, he's going to definitely finish in the top three and become the highest paid position player in free agency this offseason. And so then you got guys like Zim and Kendrick that can flat out hit. And now they're on the biggest stage with the biggest moment with rest. And they're serious threats. They're threats as if they're in their prime because they only have to do it for seven games. So I feel like the Nationals would be able to give Houston a seven-game series, and I believe they're good enough to beat the Yankees. So, yeah, I don't look at them as a wild-card team. And, again, I go back to March where I put them. I thought they were that kind of team. I was disappointed the first 2 months. I didn't understand it. But now, apparently, they're living up to everything we thought. And I don't know, you guys know their record. What's their record since the end of May? Were they the best team in baseball?
Yes, they were. They're 84-40 since, and they're 16-2 in their last 18 now, going back to the winning streak at the end of the year.
Yeah, so Grant and Danny, you know what that means. They're as good as Houston and the Yankees. Absolutely win the World Series, and people need to understand that. Don't worry about the first 2 months. Don't worry about the wild card. That happened the first 2 months. That has nothing to do with this team, nothing.
Jim, you've been great. You were the perfect guy to have on because of your ties to this organization. And speaking of which, before I let you go real quick, I read this on Wiki. I just yesterday went down the rabbit hole of reading about the 05 Nationals. And one of the things I saw, I don't remember this, so maybe you can shed some light if you have any memories. Apparently, because it happened so late, like the that first year, they didn't really have like a true radio station. So we broadcast all their games, but it was like bad signals on small radio stations. And then most of the networks didn't pick up Masson, I guess, or TV for that first year. So it was even hard to follow them. Is that fair? Do you remember that at all?
Oh, absolutely. I remember leaving the game, and I was staying at the Mandarin Oriental Hotel. That's where I was living those first couple years. And I remember I could listen to the post game show halfway to the Mandarin, which was what, 3 miles away.
That's
and
hilarious.
Then I couldn't hear after that.
Oh my!
No,
God.
I mean, oh no, we had zero coverage, zero. It was horrible. It was embarrassing. But we were so caught up, you know, in what we were trying to do in the moment that it wasn't a huge factor. But we were all concerned about how are we going to get the fan base, you know, because it was Baltimore Oriole territory and how long is it going to take and we did have all those concerns, and look, the franchise worked really hard to make sure they had the best radio coverage and the best TV coverage, but it didn't happen instantly.
Jim, awesome with us, buddy. Really appreciate the time, man.
I appreciate you guys, and your show rocks, as you guys know. By the way, congrats, Bradley Beals, Washington, D.C. Let's go.
Yeah, that's right, JP.
Two-year extension.
We're paying some Wizards today.
Plugged in.
Thanks. Let's go.
Appreciate you, buddy. Cowboys fan. Otherwise, great guy. Jim Bowden.
Oh, why'd you have to study that at the end? I was so excited about the Jim Bowden vibe.
I wanted
we just
him
had.
To hear the zing, but he hopped off. He's going to do an interview in the clubhouse, so I get it. He's getting ready for the Yankees and the Astros, Game 5. He said the Nats would beat the Yankees. Surprises me a little bit.
Yeah. Listen, on paper, I don't think you'd favor them in either series, but again, what has paper mattered as they've gone through this? The 0.1% on paper they had in May 24th
right.
to win the National League, that percent?
Carl Hagelin at 12:45. We're Grant and Danny. You're locked into the Fan.
These Washington Nationals are in the World Series for the first time in franchise history. And Louisville Slugger, they've been making bats since 1884. And BigTimeBats.com is releasing this World Series two-tone bat. The full-size bat has the team colors with red barrel and a blue handle. And has the World Series and Nationals Curly W logos with the NL Champions logo laser engraved on the bat. The full-size bat is limited to 5,000 individually numbered bats and sells for $129.95 plus shipping. Also available is the World Series team signature bat with the facsimile signatures of the players in the World Series and NL Championship logos. Both bats can be purchased in a stunning two-bat set. So just go to BigTimeBats.com now to order or call 866-280-BATS. That's 866-280-BATS for the historic Nationals' first playoff series win bat. Trademarks and logos used with permission.
On Sunday, old friend Kyle Shanahan back in town. The following Thursday, the Redskins visit Kirk Cousins and the Vikings. We're calling it Revenge Week.
Sunday to Thursday. In 4 days, think about this. Over the span of 4 days, the Redskins could be 1-7, having lost to lightning rods previously for their organization. Like, hate, indifferent, whatever. Those guys matter to Dan and Bruce an awful lot. The Redskins could absolutely be 1-7, having lost to those two guys. And the indignity suffered by the ivory tower would be profound.
I just came up with a great topic I'm going to write down.
Write it down right now.
Because we got so much going on today. Today's not the day. But tomorrow on a football Friday, when we let our hair down a little bit.
Sure, get weird.
It'll be perfect. I hate that I just said perfect wrong. I said perfect.
Like a British
Vontaze
person.
Vontaze perfect.
It's supposed to be perfect, isn't it? It's like that.
CK at the end of it, like our boss. Perfect. Who would Redskins fans rather beat, Kyle Shanahan or Kirk Cousins? I think they'd rather beat Kirk Cousins,
I think it's
right?
Cousins.
More recent. But here's the next question,
uh-huh.
And this is the topic. Who do you think Dan and Bruce would rather beat?
Oh, my God, I'm steamed up for this.
Kyle Shanahan.
Gas up the car.
Or Kirk Cousins. They get to win one of those games, and they like in a fashion where the other one looks terrible. So let's say they win the game and Kirk threw multiple picks late or something, or they win the game and Kyle Shanahan calls two timeouts on accident and moves them into field goal range. Who would they rather beat?
It's definitely Kirk because they also have been mocked for the past couple weeks about the damn good culture. So to win on national TV, because it's a Thursday night game,
it's a Thursday,
right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's true. It's an Addy TV win.
So if they win on national TV, then they can prove that the culture is damn good.
Because that's the most recent decision. Because, again, Bruce flew to Michigan to get the deal done, came back home with his tail between his legs, called two people into his office and like did a bunch of finger pointing and cut a WWE promo about how greedy Kirk Cousins was and they couldn't wait to ship his butt out of town. They didn't trade him, mind you. They just let him play because he was good enough to lead to the playoffs but not good enough to pay. Great call there,
but
buddy.
I think it's way more personal.
With Kyle?
Publicly with the Shanahans. See, Kirk Cousins, you can make the case. He had that horribly awful, dumb press conference where he handpicked three reporters to come in and he read a Xerox copy that he just printed.
Yeah.
To you know NBC4 and a couple of the networks they work with hand in hand about some fake narrative that they'd offered a lot of money to Kirk Cousins, and it's still one of the more embarrassing things that has happened, and I can't believe he wasn't called on it to more of an extent that day. But we'll digress. That press conference and some of the chicanery of the Cousins saga aside, it was never really publicly personal. It was, in their minds, we're not paying this guy this money. And the dumb thing wasn't that they didn't want to pay him a big contract. It was that they kept giving him franchise tags and paying him anyway. So, yeah, you're not locking him up. You're just giving him 1 year at a time, highest paid money in the league.
We don't want to pay him, but we'll demonstrate that by paying him.
So nothing about it made sense. But Kirk Cousins never publicly, even though we all know behind the scenes, couldn't stand Bruce Allen, couldn't stand the operation. He never said that. It wasn't ever personal. It was like football stuff. The Kyle Shanahan thing, very obviously, he was fired. He didn't leave in free agency.
Mm.
It was Mike Shanahan head-to-head with Dan Snyder. It was Mike Shanahan head-to-head with Bruce Allen. It's always been more vitriolic publicly and more personal. I actually think it's a good little debate.
It's there's fodder there.
Now, I don't know. I mean, either way, you could kind of justify it. Like, if you beat the Vikings, Cousins could still play really well in a loss. If you beat the 49ers, I don't know that it's a direct slap against Kyle Shanahan because you're the head coach on the sideline and some guy fumbled in the fourth quarter. So I don't know if that plays into it at all. But it's something maybe in revenge week that we could talk a little bit about tomorrow on Football Friday. Paul's in Vienna. What's up, Paul? How are you?
I'm good. Hey, I was in Kansas City a couple of years ago for work, and it was during their World Series run. And I tell you, I remember coming home and telling my wife this, every third person had blue on. And all the fountains from the airport all the way downtown, they had blue water. Where's our red? And what I'd like to see, I was driving out this morning, and then the local fire station near my house was putting up their go Nats.
Yeah.
Where's our red?
Well, it's a great call. So yesterday I got all jacked up. I'm driving about a mile from my house in Kingstown, and I'm behind this SUV at a light, and they got a curly W magnet on the back of the car. And I was like, oh, I love that. I was like, I never see Nat stuff on cars enough. Now, maybe I'm just noticing it because they're in the World Series, but this is cool. This is the beginning.
Yay.
And I followed that car all the way back to my house. It was my wife. I didn't even realize until we got home. It was Allison. It was our Chevy Equinox. Like, I'm sitting. I swear this is a true story. I told her when I got home.
Come on.
I'm dead serious. I never looked at the license plate. I didn't pay attention. There's a white SUV in front of me. There's a million Equinoxes. And I get behind this SUV at a light. And in my mind, I'm having this huge thing where I'm like, this is awesome. The Nats fans are coming out. And there's stuff everywhere now. And I'm like, oh my God, that's my car. And so we like pull into the driveway.
This strange car's going to my driveway.
Right. We pull into the driveway together. Oh, but when we were in St. Louis.
That's great, dude.
When I was doing the coverage at the beginning of this series, I went to the radio station there, and they had balloons up before the start of the NLCS, and they had cakes and cookies everywhere, Cardinals decorated, and everyone that came in was wearing Cardinals jerseys. I think it was game one was on Friday, so it was like a casual day anyway. But they obviously had a radio station bit where everyone was decked out in Cardinals gear.
They're cardinaling
coats or jerseys. I'm like, why don't we do this kind of stuff here? So as a radio station, we should do that. But I'm with you. Everyone should be wearing Nats gear at work. Everyone should be rocking red. You got to be painting the town Nats. We did it with the Caps when they were in the Cup. Hopefully people do it now. Carl Hagelin is on the show next, speaking of the Capitals. Looking forward to that. At 1 o'clock, the big one. Who do you want more, the Strohs or the Yankees? Who's a better fit for the Nationals in the World Series? We're Grant and Danny on the Fan. Grant and Danny, 106.7 the Fan. You go back to 2018, the Capitals won a Stanley Cup here in the nation's capital. Here we are in 2019, and the Nationals are on their way to the World Series. Times are good. Times are getting better on the show because presented by FH Fir Plumbing, Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical, our guy Carl Hagelin joins us right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Carl, thanks so much for a couple of minutes. I saw you guys have been rocking a lot of Nats gear as you're getting on and off the plane. You guys have a little baseball juice flowing, huh?
Absolutely. You know, you watching all the games and just seeing the emotions, seeing the fans, and just, you know, for me coming here and started watching the Nats, it's been unreal, obviously, now making it to the finals and all the boys on the team wearing the Nats gear. It's a cool feeling.
I feel like that's a sport you could have played, right? If you'd grown up in the States, I think you could have been a pretty good baseball player with your speed, hand-eye coordination. Could have been one of those tough outs in the Nats lineup, right?
Right. I mean, you never know. It's a good question. All I know is that I'm not great at it now, obviously, growing up in Sweden. Growing up in Sweden, no one plays baseball, so it's, you know, barely know how to throw a ball.
Carl Hagelin on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. I would like to see all the Caps throw out a first pitch just to see who would throw a strike and who would throw it, like, in the dirt. Who do you think would throw out the best and worst first pitch? Ovi's a lefty, which always surprises me. He kind of lobs it in there, okay. Who do you think would throw the best first pitch?
I can see Oshie or John Carlson. They seem to be pretty good at any sport, so I'll say they probably throw some of the best pitches. And then the worst ones might be Verana. He might have good power, but I can't see him getting in there well.
V, like, rolling it up there. He went with the two of the Americans, you know, the American pastime. That makes some sense. Carl, you guys got a huge win last night, and you needed it. Got behind early, but then you guys battled right back and played really good hockey in the second period. What clicked as you scored those three goals in succession?
Well, first of all, finally get a win at home was a good feeling. We needed that. We needed to get that swagger back. We need to be a team that plays well at home in front of our fans and, you know, gets a lot of wins. And that doesn't mean it has to be pretty, but like you said, tough start. But then big goal by V there in the first period, just a minute left. And then I think between the first and second, we just, you know, sat down and we realized we have to play with more urgency and, you know, play a little smarter. And, you know, then we came out in the second with a lot of emotion, a lot of energy. And, you know, that's the type of team we can be when we're clicking.
Carl Hagelin with us here for his weekly spot here on Grant and Danny. We mentioned John Carlson. Goodness gracious, the point totals this dude is racking up. I don't know how sustainable 14 points in 8 games is, but he's playing incredible hockey right now. What are you seeing out of him?
You see him joining the rush a lot, making, you know, the best plays on the teams at the moment offensively, and he's also playing well defensively. So, and it's not only on the power play. You know, you keep seeing him involved offensively 5-on-5, and he makes it a lot easier on the wingers and on the centers because he's such a smart player and he makes great plays. And you know, we're fortunate to have a player like him.
What do you make of the way Ilya Samsonov has played? You guys will probably only go as far as Braden Holtby can take you. I don't want to say you got a goaltender controversy brewing here, but Samsonov's been your best goaltender, and it's really impressed and surprised me how he's looked.
Yeah, he's played well. I mean, he's calm back there. He's you know, made the stops he needs to make, and you know, he's a big body too. So you know, it's hard for the other team anytime you look up and you see a big goalie. So I think he's done well for us, and you know, we need him to continue playing well when he's in the net.
And Carl, you guys are off to a 4-2-2 start. I think that's a pretty good pace, and people would take that over the course of a season. But even within games, and we talked about this last week, up and down, I don't know if that's fair, but you guys have had periods like last night where you were unbelievable in that second period, but then also that first period. What do you attribute kind of the up and down start to, just in terms of how you guys have played within games? Is it kind of the weird rhythm, the 3 games in 4 nights, some of the off days? How are you feeling about things?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. It's hard to pinpoint one thing. Like you said, we haven't won all the games where we played our best, and then we won some games where we played, you know, average. I think it's a matter of trying to get back to playing smart for 60 minutes. I know it's cliche, but that seemed to be the problem for us. We had great starts our first 6 games, and then all of a sudden, the last 2 at home, we've had terrible starts where we would be, you know, been behind the 8 ball right away. So I think it's just it's a, I think it's just a personal thing. Everyone have to look themselves in the mirror, realize what they have to do to be successful. It's different for every player, and I think here at the more games we play, the more comfortable we'll get. Because again, we do have a lot of new players on the team, and we need to gel together and become a team. So it's all a process, but you know, we can definitely do better. That's for sure.
Carl Hagelin on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. We were talking at the start of the segment about the Nats and baseball. You didn't grow up playing baseball, obviously, in Sweden. What sports do you guys play over there that you're good at that we would find either odd or haven't heard of, probably?
We have something that's similar to hockey, but it's without skates. It's called floorball. I don't know if you guys play that at all here. And then, obviously, soccer is big, but that's growing here in the U.S. too. But I played mostly soccer growing up.
Someone's asking me to ask you about burn ball. I don't even know what that is.
What's burn ball?
Burn ball is as close as you can get to baseball, I guess. It's similar style, but there's no pro in that. It's just like when you're a kid, you'll play it. There's three bases. I mean, the exact same layout as baseball, but you throw up the ball yourself and hit it. There's no pitcher throwing it to you.
Oh, wow.
That feels a little bit like a drinking game at fraternities. Is that
yeah,
kind of like that?
Basically, yeah. Yeah, exactly. More like that.
I don't want to go into detail on your two championships, and while I'm very happy for you that you're a two-time cup winner, they both came with the Penguins, and you eliminated the Capitals on your way to those cups. But I am curious. The Nats are trying to do the unthinkable here and win a title. When you look back now, like give me an idea of just how much those experiences kind of change your career, change your life, because so many of these Nats have never done it before and are trying to do it for the first time.
Well, obviously, it's probably the coolest experience you'll have as an athlete if you're able to, to win the championship. That's what you dream of growing up, and that's why you play all those games. I mean, for us, it takes 100 games to win it all in the NHL, 105, and baseball, it's almost double. So I can only imagine what toll it takes on their body. So it definitely changed your life, and the players you win with, they'll be family for the rest of your life, and you'll definitely have a special bond with the people you win it with.
Carl, looking forward to next week, man. Keep rolling like last night. That was a lot of fun to watch. Thank you, buddy.
For sure. Thanks for having me, guys.
You, always enjoy having Carl Hagelin on the show, Caps winger on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. And he's presented each week by FH for plumbing, heating, air conditioning, and electrical, home of 83, or it's free. FH Fur will clear any slow or clogged drain for you for just $83. If they can't, it's free. Details at FHFur.com. We appreciate them making it possible this year. Next, who do you want the Nats to play in the series? The Astros or the Yankees? We'll get into that.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.